downloaded the Buckeye Leafcast with your host, Andrew T. Evans, with special guest, Chris Stefanik.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, guess what? Yeah, that's right, you've gone and done it again. You've downloaded another edition of the Buckeye Leafcast, and I can't believe I'm about to say this. Yes, folks, I am your host, Andy Evans, and your other host. Seriously, I'm in shock. I just don't know what to say. We've had ourselves, yes, an intergalactic Buckeye fan sighting, folks. He's back. We're back together again. That's right. Your man, the myth, definitely the legend. We're doing it again. Mr. Chris Stefanik.
Well, you know who else is doing it again? Those Buckeye boys, Ryan Day.
Woo!
Blowout victory.
Baby, man.
Feeling pretty good. 300 yards for Justin Fields. So, dude, listen to this. This is good. This is some impressive shit right here.
All right.
Ohio State is one of only two teams in the last 100 years, 100, to open the season 10-0. And with all 10 of those victories to be by 24 points or more. The only other team to do it, Nebraska, 1973. So in the last 46 years, we're the only team that's opened the season 10 straight games, 24 points or more in the victories. Dominance?
Yes.
Hello?
That's
pretty dominant.
I saw that stat, and, you know, I'll be honest with you, not to say that I'm not impressed by that, but some of these stats, like, and I'm a pretty stats-driven guy, but some of this stuff I hear and I'm just like, okay, when are we going a little too far with some of these stats? But I sat back, I thought about it, and I was like, you know what, actually, that is a pretty cool stat. That is pretty impressive. So, yes, that's unbelievable. Ohio State, big win once again. 56-21 over the Rutgers Scarlet Knights on Saturday. Buckeyes did not cover the 52-point spread that they were supposed to win by. But
bet on the Buckeyes, shame on you for betting on a team that's, like, giving 52 points. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I thought they would cover it, but I wasn't about to take that spread. I'm like, nah, you know what? I'm not going to take that.
Even against Rutgers – 52 points, and I get it that the last three games against Rutgers, the Rutgers tallied, what, like 6 total points? It was like 56 to zip one game and 56 to 3 another game and 52 to 3. And, you know, so Rutgers had not had a lot of success scoring against Ohio State. However, I believe that was this not the most points they had scored against any opponent all year long? Was against Ohio State.
Yeah, it was the most points Ohio State gave up, tied with Florida Atlantic, and the most points Rutgers scored. Well, no, in Big Ten, it's the most they scored. They did score more versus the, you know, like the Liberties of the world.
So, yeah, but still, the most amount of points that Rutgers has scored all year against a Big Ten opponent, and it was the second most amount of points that Ohio State has given up all year long, and it was the first time all season that a team has scored a touchdown against Ohio State, and it all came against Rutgers, of all teams, Chris. I mean, a 35-point win, that is absolutely nothing to sneeze at. But, you know, we were talking just right before we turned the microphones on and started recording, and you said that you were laughing because there are some snobby Ohio State fans out there that are poo-pooing this
win. Spoiled.
Spoiled!
Absolutely spoiled. They're like, what the fuck was that? Can you believe this? My mom's, like, texting me, like, well, that was disappointing. I'm like, Mom, the starters, when they left the game, it was 42-7. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah.
So, yes, the backups, you know, which by the way, was Ohio State's backups versus Rutgers starters, or at least I saw a lot of starters out there. Their starting quarterback finished the game.
Yeah.
Rutgers. The starters versus, you know, Rutgers starters versus our backups was 14-14. You know, yeah, I mean, you would like to see, you know, the big difference between, like, you know, Maryland, the Maryland score and the Rutgers score was the backups just kept it rolling. In both games, the starters like dominated. But in, versus Maryland, the reason it was like in the 70s was because the backups kept it going, where they didn't in this one. But you know what? I'm totally not going to be upset over that. You know,
it's backups. Exactly. I'm not going to be upset either, but is it fair to say that the second and third string guys looked a little sluggish yesterday? Maybe was there a little bit of lack of motivation because it was Rutgers? And you heard Ryan Day in the post-game press conference basically said, as soon as the game ended, we're done with Rutgers. Like, we don't care to even go back and discuss Rutgers, look at film. Like, our thoughts are immediately on Penn State. That was as soon as the final whistle blew. So I think that that attitude, the fact that they just kind of walked in, who knows how much actual game prep they did for Rutgers week long. So, yeah. I mean, there was probably just an overlying attitude of like, hey, guys, look, let's just go there. Let's win the game. Let's get out of it. Let's focus on Penn State. That might have even been the rhetoric throughout the week leading up to the Rutgers game.
So the players are not, you know, ignorant. They know that Rutgers is not good at playing football, right? They know they only have two wins and that they have no wins in conference. And they also know that, hello, Ohio State's not even bringing along Baron Browning, who is fine. Damon Arnett, who is fine. Yeah, Damon Arnett has a broken hand. He's been playing with a broken hand all year.
They brought him,
but he didn't play.
Exactly.
They didn't bring Austin Mack. Austin Mack was totally ready to go by all accounts. Jonathan Cooper, Chase Young didn't come. Now, of course, Chase Young, choice of the starting. That was no choice of the coaches, but still, like, all these starters didn't come. They're aware of this. They know what they're doing. If I'm the coaches, I mean, hello, we had a bye week, Maryland, Rutgers. I'm probably, like, having, like, for 3 weeks straight, the scout team is running Penn State's offense and defense, right? I'm not running Maryland's offense, defense, or record. I may not tell the team that, because you want them to be like, hey, one play at a time. You know, we never look past the next opponent. I probably would keep that rhetoric going and just not tell them that, oh, by the way, the offense and defense on the scout team, they're all just running Penn State stuff. You know, so they're used to seeing that.
Right.
That's what I would be doing. I would be doing 3 weeks. This is like a 3 bye weeks to prep for Penn State. So, and to go to your point, like, did Ohio State overlook? The starters were lights out. I mean, yes, they gave – the only reason there was a touchdown in the first half is because of a muffed punt that gave Rutgers 26 yards is all they needed for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the starters were lights out. The second string, let's look at what happened there. So you have one play where, what was it, Amir Reap just got completely turned around.
Oh, yeah.
And so
they
had that bomb touchdown. Yeah. And Proctor took a bad angle.
Yeah.
So it was like two guys just screwed the pooch.
They biffed it. Yeah, they biffed that.
Wasn't like, oh, it's Rutgers, let's not even try. I think they just – there was young guys who don't get the same amount of reps that the starters do in practice or in games that biffed it.
Well, you know what? Let those guys –
good learning experience.
Exactly. Great learning experience. Let them go out there and biff some plays. That's the only way you're going to learn. And why not do it against Rutgers where you know there's not going to be a ton of repercussions?
Right. And so then let's look at the last touchdown. The last touchdown, Ohio State stops Rutgers on third down in the back of the end zone.
Damn.
The Rutgers receiver throws the defender to the ground.
Yeah.
Ohio State does nothing. The Ohio State defensive back did nothing but get thrown to the ground and gets called, pass interference called on. And it was like so bad that like Rutgers head coach is laughing at like,
he was like, thanks. Yeah, like he knew they got away with one. Yep.
Right. So that's the only reason they got that touchdown was like a terribly officiated call. So it's like, it wasn't like Rutgers on these, you know, scores versus the second string. They were driving down the field and just pounding our guys and embarrassed. You know, it was like they made mistakes. The referees made mistakes and gifted them a play, gifted them a touchdown. You know, the defensive backs made a mistake. Not to say that's not sloppy. I mean, I guess, you know, getting turned around on a call is kind of sloppy. Fumbling the ball if you're Steel Chambers, that's kind of sloppy, obviously. That's kind of like the definition of sloppy. So, but this is also a guy, Steel Chambers, who hasn't played in like, what, 8 weeks, 9 weeks or something? He played,
something
I think, the
like
first.
That. Yeah.
This was his third or fourth game of the season. And because they're clearly wanting to, you know, redshirt him with Crowley being maybe, you know, slightly ahead of him.
Crowley's hurt.
Yeah, I still think they'll probably want to redshirt Steel Chambers, and if we blow out one of these remaining teams, they will, you know, and they don't want to put Master Teague or obviously JK at risk. I think they just go to Mario McCall rather than burn Steel Chambers redshirt over just garbage time. You know, I just don't think that's worth burning a year of eligibility for garbage time when, you know, hey, Steel Chambers, DeMario, give him some burn. You know, let some of these walk-ons. I think that Rossi kid maybe plays running
Mitch
back.
Mitch Rossi, walk-on.
Yeah, I don't know. They see him lined up out there as a tight end, but I thought I saw him get some carries too, so I'm not sure what the hell position he is. But anyways.
He's just a filler dude. Just kind of go out there and go wherever.
Yeah, it's just not worth burning a guy's year of eligibility over that. So yeah, but there was a little bit of – I think it was more sloppy, but – maybe that lack of focus is because they're already move on, but it wasn't. Again, it's the young guys. It's the young guys who are still getting their feet wet. They're also, you're mixing matching groups, so like this isn't always like, you know, like the starters always play together. You're getting, you know, you're throwing out, you're emptying the whole bench. Everybody, you know, you're not able to travel with the whole team when you go. I think they're allowed 76 kids or whatever, where the full roster is like 100, but. But still, they're emptying everyone out there, and those guys haven't necessarily played together. Again, they haven't had a ton of reps. Like the third string guys, there's just really not much time for those guys to get reps once the season starts.
Here's something interesting on Steel Chambers. Sorry to interrupt, but real quick, I'm looking at OSU's season stats here, and he had official rushing stats against Cincinnati, Miami, and then against Rutgers. However,
you still got a game then.
Well, there's DNPs for games, like specifically DNP did not play against like Florida Atlantic, Indiana, you know, Michigan State, Northwestern, so on and so forth. Against Nebraska, however, there's no DNP for that game by his name. There's just a dash though. So it's almost as
if he might have played.
He may have gotten in the game but just did not register any stats. Right. So if that's the case, then Rutgers would be his last and final game of the season if they still want to redshirt him.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, unless Crowley's out for the year, and I haven't heard anything about his injury. I don't know what that is.
I haven't heard anything either, but.
And then I guess if DeMario went down and they got in a string of blowouts, but I mean, we may not have blowouts the rest of the year because it's going to be all ranked teams from here on out.
Well, you know
Penn
what State, though?
Penn State's going to be top 10.
Oh yeah.
Michigan is going to be at least top 15, if not top 10.
Flirting with top 10, probably then, like a 12 or 13, sure.
Yeah, and it's looking like it's going to be either Wisconsin or Minnesota. That, you know, and then, of course, the playoffs, which is going to be, you know, top 5. So, you know, we may not see any more blowouts this year. With the way this team's rolling, I certainly won't discount it. But because, you know, neither Penn State or Michigan, I'm sold that they are – you know, even remotely close to the same caliber as Ohio State, but
it's still a rivalry type game. And right. Let me tell you what, Penn State, we'll talk about that upcoming matchup here in a few minutes, because I do want to get to just a couple more things on this Rutgers game, because you know, still some interesting things came out of this Rutgers game that I wanted to highlight, you know, and I'm sure you want to talk about. But you know, that Penn State game, dude, they are going to be absolutely fired up and ready to play, given the way the last 2 years went against them. So they're going to be motivated to come in here and want to beat Ohio State on their home turf, something they haven't done since, what, 2008, I think. But at any rate, a couple of stats jumped out at me after the Rutgers game, and I thought one of them in particular, I was like, that can't be right. But I looked over the stats and I looked them over. I'm like, I think this is correct. Well, number one, Justin Fields, you mentioned at the beginning of the show, first, 300-yard game. He had 305 yards passing, so that is indeed.
In 19 attempts.
15 of 19, 305 yards, 4 touchdown passes, no interceptions, first 300-yard game ever, obviously, of his collegiate career, and it comes against Rutgers. You know, completed almost 80% of his passes, 15 to 19, Chris, just absolutely unbelievable. So hats off to him for having that kind of game.
Quick stat on Fields. So his touchdown to interception ratio is, well, coming into the game, it was the best since 2000. And he had 4 touchdowns and no interceptions. I haven't seen, I'm like, well, who had it in 2000 to see, did he now move past it to even beyond that? I think we're now down to, there was a guy in, it was maybe like 93, somewhere in the 90s, somebody had a year where they didn't have a single interception. And they threw 224 passes or something like that. So he's not going to beat that. He has one.
But, yeah, he's got one pick, obviously. Yeah,
but, right. But so he's got. I mean, that's for the number of attempts he's got, the number of touchdowns he has. That only one interception, playing at, you know, high level football, playing, you know, Ohio State's schedule is pretty good. You know, it's not like it's in the bottom 50 or anything. You know. It's so that's pretty impressive what he's doing is what I'm getting at. And you know, here's an interesting thing too that I saw is, you know, last year offense was amazing with Dwayne Haskins. It's amazing again this year too. But if you remember, like, there's all these shootouts where Dwayne Haskins is playing 4 quarters. You know, he's having to go down the wire with Maryland and all that stuff. And
yeah, Haskins very rarely do I recall. The backup, Matthew Baldwin, coming in last year for Dwayne Haskins. I mean, Dwayne was in there pretty much every game, all game.
Right. So you would think, like, okay, Haskins' stats would blow Fields out of the water. But Fields, he's accounted for 41 touchdowns this season, passing and rushing. That's actually 7 more than Dwayne Haskins that
at this point in the season?
At this time of the season. So
wow.
Through 10 games.
Wow.
So I was like, wow, that's crazy.
Now, see, you know, that's a stat I didn't even think about.
Yeah,
no shit.
And I mean,
wow.
And Haskins set the single season record 54.
54. Yeah, thank you.
So,
54 touchdowns responsible for and 50 passing touchdowns. But yeah, God. So, Fields, yeah, 31 passing touchdowns so far this year.
And I think he's only played like once in the fourth quarter. through these 10 games, so it's crazy.
Yeah, I think the Wisconsin game is the only game that he's played the entire game, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Aside from one play where he had to come out and the old chugger came in, but yeah, so there you go. That's a stat that came out of this Rutgers game, if you will. Also, how about this, Chris? This was the first time all season long that 2 different tight ends caught touchdown passes in a single game. And I'm not even sure exactly how far back you'd have to go. You'd probably have to go back a few years at least, if not longer than that, to find another game where 2 different tight ends have caught touchdown passes in the same game. Now, earlier this year, first game of the season, Jeremy Ruckert caught 2 touchdowns himself, but I'm talking about 2 separate tight ends catching a touchdown pass in a single game. Like I said, I'm not exactly sure when the last time that happened was, but you probably have to go back a while. Also, Chris, this was the first game of the entire year as gaudy of a stats that we're talking about Justin Fields putting up right now. His passing yards, he's got, what, over 2,000 on the season, 31 touchdown passes, all that kind of stuff. Do you realize this was the first game all year, dude, that a single receiver has had over 100 receiving yards in a single game?
Wow.
And it was Chris Olave, your boy, Olave. 4 catches, 139 yards, yet Chris didn't have a touchdown catch. So finally is the first receiver all year to have 100 yards receiving and yet didn't have any touchdown catches. But still, like you said, dude, Fields has been spreading it around. Victor actually led the team yesterday with 5 catches, 68 yards, had 2 touchdown catches. Hill with 4 catches for 62 yards and a score. Our boy from Westerville South, redshirt freshman, you were talking about him, and I want you to highlight this here, what you were telling me earlier in the week about Jalen Gill. What you had heard on some message boards, and it was good to see him out there. Granted, yes, in scrub time, 2 catches, though, 38 yards, and that 32-yard touchdown catch that he had out of the backfield where he was just making people miss, looking silly, and then just slammed his way into the end zone for a touchdown. So that was really cool to see. So, and then, of course, the tight ends, Luke Farrell, 2 catches, 36 yards, and a score. And then Jake Houseman, a 4-yard touchdown catch from Chris Chuganov. So spreading it around. But Jalen Gill, so yeah, talk a little bit about Jalen Gill and what you heard. And I found this interesting, and that's why I say it was good to see him out there yesterday.
Right. Yeah. So what I heard from, you know, this is program insiders, people that are at the practices, they're hanging out around the Woody and all of that, was Gill, he likes being a Buckeye. He loves the Buckeyes. You know, he lifelong guy who bled scarlet and gray.
Westerville South kid, man, right in our backyard.
Tremendous ability. You know, the coaches see it. You know, they see this kid has all the talent in the world. What was holding him back is he's just not a hard worker, and they're trying to dude, you got to bust your ass. You want to get on the field. This isn't going to cut it. You know, like there's other people busting their ass. There's other people that are talented. So, and you know, you're like, where's Gill all year? Where is Gill all year? You know, I still don't know that he's going to really see any playing time this year because KJ Hill is just so amazing. Who's the guy ahead of him. And what they've been doing is, you know, we're like, whoa, don't they rotate receivers, Chris? You know, it's the zone six, right? And we see backups come in, and you know that Garrett Wilson guy sure seems to play a lot, and blah blah blah. Well, what they do whenever you're right in that KJ isn't out there for every offensive snap, he rotates out too. But when they rotate him out, they bring in a second tight end, so KJ gets a rest whenever they're doing the two tight end formations, or even I think a few times this year they've had a 3 tight end formation. But they that's when, you know, so it's like, where exactly are your reps for Gill? Are you going to take reps away from KJ? At this point, probably not. But KJ's a senior, so the opportunity is there for Gill to seize this. He just has to want it. You know, he just has to work hard. So we'll see. That was pretty cool watching him dragging guys 5 yards downfield. really cool. He had a nice play catch earlier than that as well. That could have been a touchdown. So, you know, here's a crazy stat. Tell me, when was the last time Ohio State has had 2 different players in the same game tip an interception to themselves?
Yeah, Kevon Pope with his 2nd pick of the year, and Sean Wade. Dude, that was what, like the 2nd play of the game that Rutgers
that
ran?
That was so cool.
And yeah, Wade comes up with a crazy tip back pick for himself. God, yeah. Now there's a stat. I mean,
that,
I don't
that
think
might
they...
be the first time that's ever happened.
It might be the first time ever. Something is not officially on the books, but yeah, that was boy, Kevon Pope. Let me tell you what, man. He keeps playing like that. He can see the field a lot more next year. Of course, with Malik Harrison gone, but you know, Werner, Borland, Browning, all back next year. At least you would assume that they're coming back. So guys like Mitchell, Pope,
Gant,
Dallas Gant. Thank you.
Those 3 guys all look good.
They look
2018
good.
Class of linebackers. You know, they got 3 good ones there. So the future's bright there.
Yes, they do.
Is there a position on this team that made a bigger turnaround than linebacker from last year to this year? I mean, it's just went from like the biggest weakness on the team to, I would say, I'm, you know, they're good. They're like all conference guys across the board, I would say, or you know, not, you know, honorable mention all conference, you know.
Sure. So, sure. Well, and you know, we talked about it before. You know, we had heard that Bill Davis was not exactly a bring them in, sit them down, you know, try to teach them how to watch tape kind of guy. He's more of an NFL guy where, you know, these pros, you know, maybe you're going to try and teach them a little bit, but for the most part, they're already kind of trained, if you will, on how to watch tape. And he wasn't that kind of coach. He never really took the time to sit down and show them, you know, what they need to do when watching film, breaking it down, how to learn this and that and da-da-da-da-da. And Al Washington's come in and done that. And you can tell, man, the linebacker position, just a rejuvenated energy and a force, it seems, with those guys.
Yeah, it's impressive. I'm happy. I like seeing Justin Hilliard out there.
Yep.
You know, we were having a discussion. I'd like to see him go for a sixth year of eligibility with the they're talking about doing it of because he wants to come back.
I just don't see how that's possible though, because he would have to apply for a medical red shirt, right?
Right.
And he was on the field yesterday, so I don't see how he can cry, "I'm injured," when he's out there playing.
So that's not how the medical redshirt works. So you can have, like, so let's say you your first year, you're not ready to play, so you take a redshirt. Next year, you're a redshirt freshman. You come out, and first game of the season, you know, blow your knee out. So you miss your second year. Then you come out, you play 3 years. Play the whole season, you know, 12 game year. So now you're in your third year of playing, your fifth year in the program, like Hilliard is right now. You finish the year. Well, what's happened is, and you've played the last 3 years in a row, and that's not even the case for Hilliard. He's missed, like, I think this is his first full season. Like, this is basically his first year where he's played the whole year. You can then say you're not redshirting that fifth year. What you're doing is you're saying, you know, back in my second year, I missed the year. I'm going to apply for medical redshirt for my second year, you know, 3 years ago. That's what you do. And if you look at the rules, what the rules say is you can get a medical redshirt if you played a third of the season or less, so four games, and it had to be the third of the season had to be at the beginning of the year. It can't be like I was injured in camp and then I recovered in game eight or nine, I came out and played. If you come out and play later in the year, you cannot get a medical redshirt. You can get a redshirt, but you can't get a medical redshirt. It has to be at the beginning of the year where you played, and then you missed the end of the season. So he would qualify for that actually probably a few times because he's been injured.
Well,
like basically his whole career, he's pretty much been injured until this year.
Yeah.
So they're saying he's going to try to apply for it. Now, it is rare that you get the 6 year of eligibility. It's not unprecedented. People have had a 6 year of eligibility.
Yeah.
But the NCAA really doesn't like to do it. Like they try to keep it in 5 years. But if he comes back, he could get that spot. I mean, he would be the old man by far, six year in the program, tremendous ability, you know, five star kid, had all the athletic ability in the world coming out of high school. He still looks great to me. I think by then, you know, they talk about the game slowing down the more you see it. Well, he'd have been there in 6 years. At this point, if the game hasn't slowed down for him, it's not going to. So I think he might have that ability to see the play developing, like before it's even developing, kind of thing, and be, you know, breaking things up. He could really challenge for that spot once, you know, what's his name?
Malik Harrison.
Malik Harrison goes on in the NFL. So we'll see. But even if he doesn't get it, the future's bright there with the young guys they've got. And we're not even talking about the guys like Tommy Eichenberg and whatnot that are also in the program, the first-year guys.
Cade Stover, who was Cade actually Stover on the field.
There's a guy.
Rutgers.
Yeah, I can't think of what his first name is, but Craig Young. Craig Young,
Craig
another
Young.
True freshman who was out there,
yep,
making plays, got some tackles yesterday. So, you know, they've got so much talent that, you know, the fact that, you know, they basically have three starters back next year because both Borland and Brown may as well be starters. They both play starter, you know, they split reps at middle linebacker. So, you know, and then Pete Werner, of course, will be back. You also got Brendan White, who, as we've talked a lot in the Leaf cast, is a hell of a playmaker who's not getting a lot of snaps, but, you know, maybe he slides up there and becomes a starting linebacker next season. You know, he'll be a senior next year. I think he'll be a senior next year. So
that'd
be another guy competing. So, you know, that's going to be one that just keeps on rolling next year.
Yeah, unfortunately, man, Brendan White, boy, after last season and he really came on – You know, especially starting in that Michigan State game, and really thought, I mean, he without a doubt was going to be one of the mainstays of the defense this year. And, you know, now that they got, they were talking about this whole bullet thing, which basically never happened. But Sean Wade has been the guy that's, you know, slipped into that kind of third defensive back position rather than playing this bullet. And for good reason, obviously. I mean, Sean Wade is definitely a Sunday guy, so you can't fault the coaching staff for wanting to play him ahead of Brendan White. But, you know, heck yeah, Brendan White actually might find himself in Sean Wade's spot next year if Sean Wade leaves, which there's talk of him possibly going.
I gotta believe he's gone. I mean, his camp is exploring it, and I can't see him lasting beyond the third round and probably more like second. Especially, you know, Ohio State's gonna be high profile. You know, they're always high profile at Ohio State, but going out, yeah. I mean, it's you know, the chances of Ohio State going to the playoffs are, you know, knock on wood, pretty high at this point. You know, they've got to be one of the higher probability teams to make it. So, I think he's gone. I
love to see him stay, but right. Chances are, well, we know Arnett's gone, Okuda's gone. I mean, they're
Fuller's
talking
gone.
About him being a top 10 pick. Of course, yeah, Jordan Fuller's gone. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of spots open in the secondary come next year where Brendan White's going to, you know, have to find his way somewhere into one of those spots. And then, to your point, maybe even the linebacker spot, too, that'll be departed by Harrison. So definitely some opportunities next year for Brendan White to slip in there. And that'll conclude this portion of the Rutgers recap of the Buckeye Leafcast. Be sure to download part two, where Andy and Chris have a little bit of fun talking college football playoffs, as well as preview the Buckeyes' big game against the Penn State Nittany Lions on Saturday.